from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, some private California drug rehabilitation clinics have defrauded taxpayers out of tens of millions of dollars. That's according to a new report from the Center for Investigative Reporting. The year-long investigation found that some clinic operators are charging the government for non-existent patients and services through the state's Drug Medi-Cal program. And the Department of Healthcare Services, the state agency which oversees the Drug Medi-Cal program, says it doesn't yet know the extent of the problems and is investigating. The agency recently raided 16 clinics that it suspects violated state laws. We'll examine the alleged abuses in Drug Medi-Cal and look at what kind of impact the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, will have on the program. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A recent report put up by the Center for Investigative Reporting and CNN documents fraud and abuse in a number of California private drug and rehabilitation clinics. Just recently, state officials from the Department of Healthcare Services, which actually has taken over authority from the Department of Alcohol and Drug Programs, temporarily suspended 16 rehabilitation treatment facilities suspected of violating healthcare laws, and more investigations are underway. Because of the Affordable Care Act, the 1st of January 2014 will see an expansion of benefits for drug medical patients. And in this forum, we want to focus on the Center for Investigative Reporting and CNN report, the shift of authority to the Department of Healthcare Services, and what lies ahead for private rehab treatment centers. Joining us from Sacramento is Christina Jewett, who is a reporter with the Center for Investigative Reporting and worked on this investigation with CIR reporter Will Evans in collaboration with CNN. The stories will be airing, by the way, on Anderson Cooper 360 both tonight and Wednesday night at 5 p.m. And you can find the complete stories at CIRonline.org. And we welcome you to the program, Christina Jewett. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Norman Williams with us, who is Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Department of Healthcare Services. And good morning, Norman Williams.
Good morning.
And we say good morning to Tom Renfrey, Executive Director of the County Alcohol and Drug Program Administrators of California. That's CADPAAC. Welcome, Tom Renfrey.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you all aboard, and thank you all for being here. And Christina Jewett, I'd like to begin with you. This has been Well, a sensational story. I don't know really how else to characterize it. In many respects, and I want to get to the heart of it, of course, so listeners know exactly what's going on, because there's a lot of fraud and a lot of abuse that has come forward. This started, from your perspective, though, with a tip and a lot of rehab places suddenly being discovered to be private companies?
That's right, Michael. This is a project that's been a year in the making. Essentially, the very early phases of the reporting involved getting two bankers' boxes full of documents and just really pouring through audits of these programs, particularly in Southern California. And more bankers' boxes came from other counties throughout the state. And just seeing widespread indications of false billing that auditors created a beautiful paper trail for us, but often failed to shut down the clinics. And we actually wound up hitting the streets and did some stakeouts and surveillance and found that actually observing the billing problems was quite easy.
Billing problems is putting it mildly. I mean, in some cases you had, for example, a young girl would go in the clinic, sign that she was getting rehab, get $5 for it. Taxpayers would get billed, and she would go and buy weed with the $5.
That's right. That case was charged as a crime. I mean, we did find things that struck me also as sensational. We found that there was a man in Texas who was convicted of engaging in organized crime in a statewide case that got coverage in multiple newspapers across Texas. This guy went to prison. He served 1 year of a 7-year sentence. 2 years out, he got a contract with the state of California. He was certified by the state, got a contract with LA County, and he's been operating in the decades since as a rehab provider.
He's a Russian immigrant, and a lot of these figures were African immigrants. I don't know if that's significant, but it seemed to me to be, in many respects, curious that so many were not American citizens initially.
Yeah, that's certainly something we noticed, and it's something we asked a lot of folks about, and Really didn't get a really clear picture, but it does seem like there's affinity groups and some connections actually between the people who run the clinics. It really has been a fascinating project.
And the guy with the Texas organized crime conviction was salaried at over $100,000. I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars here, aren't we, in terms of fraud billed to the state and the Fed?
Absolutely. We did a massive spreadsheet analysis, and we found that $94 million over 2 years was sent to clinics where the county auditors had found clear signs of problems, things like billing for counseling sessions on days when the counselor, was off work, things that just signify something's wrong here. So we did find that it appeared to be quite widespread. We also interviewed we talked to counselors, we talked to clients, we talked to people who had been in regulatory positions with the state, and it was very, well known that this program has a fraud problem.
And this focus, for the most part, on Southern California, went after public records there. Do we know how widespread or pervasive throughout the state this may be?
You know, we did get public records from other counties, Northern California, Central and Southern. And I think you used the word sensational. And I mean, just what we saw out of L.A. and Riverside really sort of jumped out with red lights and sirens to us. And some of the other counties, it looked like things were going OK.
There's also, there's some big questions here. The certification process, this whole pay and chase system, and the state getting billed for sessions that never took place. It's an extraordinary story, but you have to ask, and I will ask you directly if you have any answer to this big question, is how this went on for so long.
You know, that is a million-dollar question, because we found the laws on the books. I mean, I'm sitting here reading the Welfare and Institutions Code of the state of California, and it does say very clearly, that some of these types of things just shouldn't be going on. This program was run by the state alcohol and drug program, a smaller department. They did sit down at the table with the larger state Medicaid agency, the Department of Healthcare Services, for anti-fraud meetings. It really sort of boggles the mind how this problem was so well known by so many for so long, but continued.
And there were other investigations in addition to yours, we should add here. But as of July 1st, there's no more Department of Alcohol and Drug Programs. Now it's under Department of Healthcare Services. Does that bode well?
Essentially the employees, their letterhead changed, the signatory of their checks changed. It's the same people in a lot of the same functions. Certainly the state, as Norman will tell you, has jumped in recent weeks after we, shared some of the findings of our investigation and sought sit-down interviews. The state has taken some steps to go after this, so it remains to be seen sort of what that looks like and whether that means, the really important thing that people who need that help, who hit bottom, who decide they're done with that addiction, can turn around, turn to the government, look for help and get really meaningful help. And that's, I think that's the million-dollar question.
Well, we're going to talk shortly with Norman Williams. I also wanted to add the fact that we did invite a number of these clinic operators who were mentioned in the investigation in the article that appeared. They all declined to be on with us. Can you give us a little primer, Christina, about how the money works? I mean, there's a kind of state billing that goes to Fed billing, county billing. I mean, how actually the process goes up the line?
It's essentially a mix of state and federal dollars, and it's changed a little bit with realignment in recent years. But essentially, that money gets sent down to the counties. So the state will certify the clinics and basically open the door for them to operate. Then the counties have to enter into contracts with those certified clinics. And then the counties decide how much money they get, if they get raises, and then basically how the money flow goes.
In a time when, for example, treatment for methamphetamine addiction and other kinds of addiction across the state is in decline, here's the story that we're talking about where you've got a number of clinics running fraud and abuse and running illegally. Let me bring Norman Williams into this. He's Deputy Director of Public Affairs for the California Department of Health Care Services. And there has been certainly an investigation under your aegis, Norman Williams. And I know that some of these clinics have been temporarily closed. How optimistic are you that this is going to go forward and really the taxpayers aren't going to find themselves defrauded as they have been now for these many months?
Well, Michael, thank you for the opportunity today. We're really happy to be able to talk to you about some of the things that the state is doing now to improve oversight of this program. We are very optimistic. At this point, we have temporarily suspended 29 centers, and that's up from the 16 that was reported recently. And we're continuing this investigation, and we're going to make sure that this program is available, efficient, and effective for the people of California.
You were looking into the application process, too? There are a lot of people who are certified here, for example, that maybe should never have been certified.
Well, absolutely. That's a big part of our program. As you mentioned, we took over the Drug Medi-Cal program in about July of 2012. So we've had it for just over a year. And we immediately began a top-to-bottom review. We're taking a look at all of the processes, and we're taking a look at how they were put into place. And we're going to look both at the centers and internally to understand, you know, what we need to improve and how we're going to do that. So we've made a lot of progress, as you can see, from the temporary suspensions, and we're not done yet. We're going to make
congratulations on that progress. We just heard Christina Jewett, though, say that a lot of the same people are working in these clinics. If there's something rotten at the core where these clinics are concerned, one has to wonder if the same people, the same personnel ought to be continued at all of them.
Well, internally, these aren't the same people running the Drug Medi-Cal program. They're over at the this program now is with the Department of Healthcare Services. We have one of the top fraud-fighting units in the nation as far as Medicaid programs are concerned. And there's different leadership for the actual Drug Medi-Cal program. So that's a big change here. We're going to make the best of it. Out in the centers, one of the things we're doing is we're going to make every single center in the state reapply for certification. So that's going to give us a better idea of exactly who's leading this program, their background, and we're going to make sure that we have top-quality operators for this important program.
I think what you're saying is the public can count on you rooting out all this gaming of the system and fraud and finding better management and finding better certification for that management.
That's absolutely our goal. We're working very hard to do this. This is a very important program. About 60,000 very vulnerable people are getting these services today. And we want to make sure they're getting the best value and the best services that they can. We want to keep scam artists out of the Drug Medi-Cal program and make sure that everything's available for the people who need them.
And what about, if I could ask you, Norman Williams, about the Affordable Care Act? That could enhance scrutiny, or it could just set things into a tailspin of confusion. How do you see it?
We see it as enhancing the program. The Affordable Care Act requires that we reevaluate providers, and so that's going to be one of the provisions that we use to make sure that the right people are running these centers out in California. It's an enhancement for us. We see it as a positive, and we're going to take full advantage of it.
Again, we're talking with Norman Williams, who is Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Department of Healthcare Services, who have now gotten into essentially monitoring and overseeing the kind of problems that are rife within treatment centers, rehabilitation treatment centers. I want to bring Tom Renfrey into discussion. He's Executive Director of the County Alcohol and Drug Program Administrators of California, CADPAAC, and thank Norman Williams for being with us. We're going to say goodbye to him, but let me go to you, Tom Renfrey, and just get a sense of overall picture first, because when Proposition 36 ended, which was helping programs treat the essentially those in need of drug rehabilitation, you have a situation that got, to a great extent, worse and worse. And now, I think I'm quoting you kind of almost directly, you say it's almost like treating a, you don't treat a diabetic until you have to cut off a limb. It's gotten that bad?
Well, yeah, that's a metaphor I did use because the fact that our system has been so severely underfunded for many years, we've only really been able to treat people who are in more advanced cases. I mean, it's clear that with adequate resources, we can try to intervene earlier with folks who are in maybe early stages of their addiction or alcohol or drug use and try to intervene with them at that point rather than getting to the point where they're so severe that they require, you know, more intensive treatment. But it really gets to an issue of it's not just Prop 36. I mean, that was has been a very effective program, but the state has totally defunded it over the last few years.
It's gone to probation departments largely, hasn't it, a lot of this treatment?
Well, probation has certainly been a partner with the treatment in Prop 36 services. That's the way it was designed, and that's the way it worked effectively. But again, without any money, it's very difficult, to provide adequate treatment. And that was for people who were referred from the criminal justice system. The drug Medi-Cal issue is bigger than just simply criminal justice referrals.
Well, let me at least know what's going on until January 1st, 2014. There will be limited services right up till then?
Well, there'll be the drug Medi-Cal program is rather antiquated and provides a limited range of services right now, but it will be greatly expanded come January 1st due to the Affordable Care Act and steps the state has taken to enhance these benefits, in addition to additional federal funding that we'll be receiving. In regard to this report, there are certainly some bad providers out there. There's no question about it. But let's not let those few bad providers tarnish the fact that there are hundreds of very good providers who are providing really good care to people with substance abuse disorders. And so we need to keep in mind there's a lot of good treatment that's going on, even with limited resources, even with a limited range of benefits.
But it is let's get back to certification, because it's pretty easy, and there's been little oversight on that. It's been characterized as a broken system. You only have services if you have county contracts with the rehabilitation center, and any provider can pretty much get that contract.
Well, you have hit on a crucial issue here, and we've been our county administrators have been advocating for years for reforms in the drug Medi-Cal system, and specifically, I can give you three that we've been pushing for, and hopefully, we'll get. One is around the certification system. We need to let counties have the authority to certify providers. As good as the state bureaucracy might be, they're not as close to the ground as counties are, who interact directly with these providers. If the program was realigned to counties back in 2011, we need to let counties have the authority to manage the program, which they don't have now. So, number one, counties need to be able to certify and monitor these providers. Secondly, we need to beef up the drug Medi-Cal certification requirements. The bar is very low right now. There's been no improvement in those certification requirements for many years, and they don't really get into adequate treatment standards. There is a separate set of alcohol and drug program certification standards for these programs, but they're voluntary. Programs don't have to meet them to become drug Medi-Cal certified, and that's a state issue that they made them voluntary rather than mandatory. That needs to change. These programs all need to meet those higher treatment standards. And third, we need to give counties the ability to select and to deselect the providers that they're going to contract with.
Well, you're talking a lot about the counties, but can't you do an end run now to the state because of a methadone provider lawsuit a while back?
Well, the problem is that if a provider doesn't want to contract with the county, or the county doesn't want to contract with a certain provider because of quality issues, that provider can do an end run around the county and go directly to the state to get a contract, and that's the problem. Then counties don't have any oversight over that. So that's one thing that we're hoping to change is to be able to get counties to select providers based on, a provider can't get paid unless he has a contract. But if the county doesn't want a contract with them for quality reasons, as long as the county can guarantee timely access to services to everyone who needs them, the county should be able to decide who they want to contract with and not have the ability for the provider to go around the county to go directly to the state.
So the county needs to certify, manage, oversee providers, but you also need to put teeth into that certification process.
That's exactly what I've been talking about. There need to be higher certification standards.
And are you optimistic that you can bring all that into fruition?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm hopeful. We're working hard on it, and we're working with the State Department now that the program has changed hands here. We're really hoping to make some progress on this. I think we've got some impetus going here, and I think I'm hopeful that we'll be able to make these changes.
There's been as was mentioned earlier by Christina Jewett, there's been government realignment in the program, and upcoming, of course, is the so-called Obamacare 100% payment from the Affordable Care Act. How does that change the terrain?
Well, that just gives us the opportunity to access a lot more resources to be able to provide enhanced services. It doesn't really get to the issue that we've been talking about around the quality of providers, but it certainly will give us the resources that this field has been sorely lacking for many years to be able to provide more, you know, enhanced services and start building up our system of care.
That's Tom Renfrey, Executive Director of the County Alcohol and Drug Program Administrators of California. Let me give out the phone number. Many of you, I think, may be interested in joining in this conversation, and if you are, you have an opportunity to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and it's 866-733-6786. Again, you can join us toll-free, and please feel free to do that. 866-733-6786 is the number to call, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go to our website. Our website is kqed.org/forum, and you click on this segment. Some private California drug rehabilitation clinics have defrauded taxpayers, and we're talking about that defrauding out of tens of millions of dollars. That's according to a new report from the Center for Investigative Reporting, and their year-long investigation with CNN found that some clinic operators are charging the government for non-existent patients and services through the state's Drug Medi-Cal program, Department of Healthcare Services, and the state agency that oversees the Drug Medi-Cal program says it doesn't yet know the extent of the problem and is investigating, but 22 of these rehabilitation centers have been shut down. If I could just go back, Christina Jewett, to you, how do you foresee things with respect to so-called Obamacare with full payment? I mean, could be a good thing, but again, it could bring even more scammers and schemers out.
That's right, Michael. You know, if you don't mind, I'd like to just jump in on a couple things that I heard the other gentleman discuss. I thought it was very interesting that Tom is advocating the pushback to county control. And we did find that some counties were very sophisticated, but we also found a county that signed a contract with someone who was actually a wanted fugitive for drug Medi-Cal fraud, who got a $620,000 contract signed and sealed just last year. And that county, we talked to him about that, and they had someone else at the same clinic who was on the banned biller list, and they told us essentially that they weren't aware, you know, how to check the banned biller list. So just to jump in on that point of county control, I think, you know, you have different levels of sophistication in different counties. As far as Obamacare, it raises huge questions. I mean, you're talking about an incredible influx of money, and the question is if you have, you know, really the quality care there to meet the need in the infrastructure of clinics that we've got in Southern California. So I think that's a huge question, and hopefully we get there.
Tom Renfrey, you want to respond to what we've heard just a moment ago from Christina about the fraud on the county level and the difficulties at the county level?
Well, that's, you know, that's an unfortunate situation. I'm not sure what county that is that she was referring to, that somehow that, you know, that provider got a contract with the county provider the county contracting system, and especially in larger counties, can be somewhat complex and often goes through up to the Board of Supervisors. But having said that, we still think that counties, because they're closer to the ground to these providers, have the better opportunity to monitor and to oversee. And if the county had the ability to certify that provider, it might have avoided this situation.
All right,
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know the details of that specific case. But again, the closer to the ground that we can get in terms of monitoring the programs, I just say the chances are better that we'll be able to catch that kind of a thing rather than have it being caught at the, you know, at a state bureau.
All right, the music is rising, which means we're coming up on a break. I have some questions for you, listeners. Have you ever, or someone you ever, you know, been part of a drug Medi-Cal system, and what was it like? And how can the state better serve drug Medi-Cal patients? And if you've worked in a drug rehab facility, let us know what that experience was like. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about an investigation that has looked at drug rehab centers, particularly in Southern California. About 29 of them are temporarily suspended, and the investigation is ongoing. Christina Jewett is with us, a reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting, who has done this story. Tom Renfrey, executive director of the County Alcohol and Drug Program Administrators of California. And we have Norman Williams back with us, who is deputy director of public affairs with the California Department of Health Services. You may want to join this conversation, and you are cordially invited to do so. And we do have some questions for you, as I mentioned before the break. If you've ever been or know someone who's been part of a drug Medi-Cal system, what was it like? And also, have you ever worked at one or any drug treatment facility? And what was that experience like? And what can the state do to reduce fraud in the system? And how can the state better serve drug Medi-Cal patients? These are all questions that really are relevant to our discussion here. And let's go to our callers. By the way, let me tell you, there are a number of ways you can join us. And you can also go online and find out exactly what is in this report. You can find the complete stories on CIRonline.org. But you can also go to our website and post a comment or let us know what your thoughts are. That's kqed.org/forum, or go to our Facebook page or call us. And again, our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We'll go to Michael first. Michael, join us.
Thank you for taking my call. My first a comment and then a question. The comment or observation, kind of following on Mr. Krasny's observation about, well, you got people in the system that are already looks like they're committing fraud. Why aren't they out of the system? The language I'm hearing is very weak. We're trying. We're doing things. Okay, fraud's being committed. People are stealing, what, millions of dollars. Where are the convictions? Where are the attempts to put people in jail, fire them? I hear a lot of trying. I hear a lot of weak language. And I'd like to know what substantial things are planned to be done to get criminals out of the system and put them in jail. And Michael Krasny, I'd appreciate it if you'd do some hard follow-ups if you get some weak responses to my question.
Thanks. All right. I thank you for the question. And we've got Norman Williams back here. And Norman Williams, I'd like you to respond to that caller, if you'd be kind enough. In fact, I'm looking also at another caller from Oakland who says, wants to know if the Department of Justice is involved or the State Attorney General's office in an effort particularly to recover money billed from Medi-Cal or Medicaid.
Well, certainly. I appreciate the comment, and it's a very valid comment. We are working closely with the Department of Justice on this. Of those 29 cases, we've referred them to the Department of Justice for further investigation. Should the evidence of fraud be supported, there will be prosecution. We're going to do that to the fullest extent possible. We're going to make sure that people who have defrauded the program are punished. Going forward, we're going to continue this investigation statewide. We expect to find more than just the 29 centers now and refer those over to the Department of Justice for further prosecution.
I want to reassure the caller that we will, of course, stay on top of this, and I presume you will as well, Christina Jewett.
Oh, yeah, and I just wanted to jump in. I mean, we feel like we witnessed crimes on our stakeout and our hidden camera ventures. Just watching the clinics in action, counting people coming and going and comparing that to billing, just vast differences between how many people walking in the door at one clinic and how many people getting billed. Another, we walked in with a hidden camera, said, you know, it's pretty quiet here. What's going on, you know? And the receptionist said, hey, you know, there's no counseling on Wednesdays. No counseling at all Wednesdays. We looked at the billing. They're billing on Wednesdays. And this is the kind of stuff we were able to catch in real time. Now that the state's gone in and shut down clinics, the bar is going to be a little higher. They can't really catch those types of things in real time. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, you know, if any of this gets played out in the criminal realm.
Didn't you even discover a state investigator who tried to shake down a clinic owner?
That's right. That's been part of the complication for overseers who are frustrated and who have talked about working with Norman's department for at least 5 years at the table at anti-fraud meetings that his department has led, the Audits and Investigations Unit. And folks with the old Alcohol and Drug Department did talk about frustration of trying to change things and how that got stymied when one of their own was caught shaking down clinic owners for bribes and wound up entering a guilty plea to those charges.
Again, Christina Jewett is a reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting, and our next caller is David. David, join us.
Yeah, I'm actually a New Yorker, but I've been spending more and more time in here in Mill Valley and probably will end up in California. I've been a trustee of a New York State drug treatment program for 30 years. And in listening to this and reading some of the regulations that California has as compared to New York, you have a very fragmented system. To take the authority and fragment it even more among all of the counties. If you go to New York State and look at the website for the single state agency that supervises drug treatment programs, the regulations are very clear. The lines of authority are very clear. Who to bring complaints to is very clear. And the staff are very aggressive in supervising consistently across the state. It seems to me that California is going the wrong way. You have a problem with your state agency that needs to be strengthened.
Can I go to you on that, Tom Renfrey, fragmentation and, well, lines of authority?
Well, sure. I mean, if the state would fund the oversight of these programs adequately and wanted to take it on, I would agree with the caller. But the fact is, this program was realigned to counties in 2011. That was a decision made by the governor, by Governor Brown and the legislature. If you're going to realign a program to counties, giving counties the responsibility for the program, you've got to give counties the authority. Now, you know, you can debate whether or not that becomes a fragmented system, but that is, in fact, what the legislature and the governor did. They realigned this program to the counties. That's the reality of the situation.
So are you essentially moving it into the realm of the executive here in terms of culpability for fragmentation?
Well, I mean, just look at the facts. Who was it who pushed this realignment? The state now doesn't have the local match for these programs. That money and that responsibility has been realigned to counties. So, I mean, whether you want to cast, you know, whether you want to look at that as a positive or a negative thing, that's up to one's own opinion.
But you had these problems before realignment, obviously.
Absolutely.
These have been going on for a long time.
Absolutely, they did.
The
problems existed long before realignment, when the state was, in fact, in control of this program.
I want to bring on some more of our callers. Ann, join us. You're on. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, Ann. Join us.
Well, I'm the mom of a young teen who went through a drug program at Kaiser in Oakland. And I have trouble with the idea that they're going to... that there's this fraud going on, but I want to point out the fact that these are very good programs. The fact that it's now under the health care instead of the tobacco and alcohol, to me, is a great thing, because that should completely allow, there's a lot of accounting in a health care system versus just a clinic. And two, the fact that this thing of county, I agree, there's the graft in Oakland. I'm sorry, but I've lived here almost 20 years, and I've been in New York, too, for 15. And I think that the local plateau is where you start getting into favors and hiring people and giving people a break, whereas in the healthcare system, they have to meet certain requirements. And I also like the idea with the Obamacare coming in that programs such as DDRP at Kaiser will have more resources, because my only complaint with the whole program was that there were too many kids, you know, or too many people in the program sometimes for there to be effective dialogue and to accomplish what the council wanted. But I think that the idea that there's been all this fraud, I think it's easy to get on the bandwagon and say, oh, we've got to, you know, sue all these people. And yes, now that it's been discovered, take care of it. That's what I want as a taxpayer, take care of it. But I also want the point of these programs to be remembered, and that I think it's a great thing that it's been discovered and it's going to force them into what the caller said, that the compliance and the standards have to go way up. That's all.
Okay, and I thank you for the call. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, just to jump in, I don't think Kaiser's in the drug Medi-Cal system. That sounds like it's not actually.
It's separate from that. Yeah, but it is one of those that's had certainly some success and might be a good paradigm for others. I'm just wondering, though, if I could go back, if I may, Tom Renfrey, to you. Does it suggest to you that maybe there will be different models down the line here, since, you know, you've had to readjust with realignment and you're readjusting again with the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, there's certainly going to be changes in the field. I think that...
I mean, how far can reform go in terms of actually changing the present system is really what I'm asking you, of course.
How far... I'm sorry, your question again was how far.
Well, how far can you change a system that is almost part of it, has been part of the infrastructure, has been entrenched for all these years? You want to reform the system and you want to change it, but you've had realignment to deal with. Now you're going to have the Affordable Care Act to deal with. And can you actually change the model? If you look at Kaiser, for example, it's a much better model.
Right. But these are models that are going to be functioning under the changes brought by the Affordable Care Act. We're going to be seeing a lot more like health plans, primary care clinics, health clinics getting into the field of treating substance use disorders, as you know, integrating that with primary care, which we think is a good thing. I think that's a model that we're going to be seeing more of in terms of health homes, medical homes, and so forth, treating the whole person, not just a particular disease. And I think part of that treating the whole person is going to include treatment for mental illness and substance use disorders. We're still going to need specialty care programs, programs that are functioning under drug Medi-Cal. And again, I've already indicated some of the systemic reforms that we are working to enhance or to bring into being. So, again, we're just going to, we're going to keep pushing forward. You got to remember, I go back to what the caller from New York said. New York has always had a better funded system of care for this. That California has never adequately funded, not even close to adequately funding the system of care for substance use disorder treatment. And that's not just a problem of this administration. That goes back many, many years. It's been a field that has been largely ignored by the state. And I don't think I can emphasize that enough. I think that the changes coming with the Affordable Care Act are going to bring in additional resources and help that we can that we can start improving this field, especially around drug Medi-Cal. But I'm still going to hold to the reforms that I've already indicated that I think need to take place, especially the strengthening of the drug Medi-Cal certification standards.
It's also the fact that we're talking about private clinics for the most part. Many of these public clinics have I think. Norman Williams have long waiting lists for people just to get in, which makes it more likely that if they can even possibly afford it or get any kind of revenue behind them, they'll go into the private clinics.
And that's certainly a concern. We are working, very diligently to try to make sure that the access issue is taken care of, that our patients, our members, can access services when they need them. And I think one of the things that Tom talked about, the importance of providing these services in a coordinated way, is something that the governor has really made a lot of progress on and pushed us to do. And as you can see, the substance use disorder services are now under one department. It's not two departments with alcohol and drug programs. It's now under DHCS. And so my director, Toby Douglas, has made it a very top priority to integrate these services both in terms of your physical health, your mental health, substance abuse disorder treatment. All of those things are now under one roof, and we're going to put our resources into making this a very effective program.
You're saying
that kind of integration is exactly what I mentioned before. Yeah. That's the kind of thing I think we're going to need to see. We need to see, and that is going to happen under healthcare reform.
Well, the New York example is certainly one that's less fragmented than what we have here. Let me get a number of other calls here, time permitting. Paul, you're next. Hi, Paul, are you there? No. Okay. Then we go to another caller, and that's a caller from Canyon Lake, Texas. John, welcome.
Hi there. I'm fairly familiar with drug and alcohol problems. My wife was an addict for many years. I tried many instances to help her. And referring to the California system for drug and alcohol treatment, as well as all over the country, from what I've noticed, the entire system is broken. Their treatment centers are highly ineffective. They help very few individuals. Most people get sober from incarceration. When they're put in prison for a year or whatever, they usually come out and change their lives. This is a big thing because it seems to isolate them from their issue, and if they have any hope, that's the one thing that gives them a hope. Unfortunately, they also give them a felony. And the whole system with drug and alcohol addiction, I consider that to be a mental issue. That is a mental illness that people do not have control over, and our mental health system is broken as well. We really need to take a serious look at it, and we need to address the issues at hand, because it is a huge problem with our society. And why is the public funding these people that are going into alcohol treatment centers, or drug and alcohol treatment centers for alcohol addiction, when we have industries that are giving this alcohol to them and getting them addicted? They're not responsible for treating them for their addiction. You know, I think those industries should bear the cost of helping those that are afflicted by the products which they sell.
All right, John, I thank you for your strong sentiments and appreciate you expressing them. And
I couldn't agree more with his last statement about the industry, the alcohol industry, you know, having to you know, pay for the social impacts of their misuse of their product. But I think,
well, wait, does that include wine, by the way? Does that include all
well,
alcohol?
Any, you know, sure. I mean, and they, we haven't seen an increase in alcohol tax in California in many, many years, unlike other states. And we think that the industry should be doing their fair share to take care of some of the problems that the misuse of their product is creating. So
yeah, but here,
that's a whole other issue.
That is a whole other issue. I say here for the nonce, we're talking about misuse of taxpayer money. Let me get another caller on. Joe, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Joe, and I'm a former treatment counselor. And kind of what I noticed in the last couple of years is that our jails are getting full. Our county jails are getting full. So we're purging people out of jails into treatment centers. I kind of feel like that's a big flaw. A lot of nonviolent people come through. They're there to do their time, you know, kind of mooch off the system, if you will. And I think that's a big flaw in the system, that we need to have people in these treatment centers that we're funding that want to be there. And I also believe that we should have a set type of program. I agree with the gentleman that was speaking earlier that, you know, we need to focus on the whole person. And that's why I believe the Synanon programs out of San Francisco are really great, because they just don't focus on the addiction. They focus on the behavior of the addiction. And the people want to be there, because sometimes they spend years in treatment. And that's what I have to say, sir.
I'm glad you said it, and I thank you for the call. And let me go back for a moment to Christina Jewett, if I may. I had said earlier that we had asked a number of these operators to appear with us that are mentioned, Tom Ajunda, for example, and Bessie Anabara. Again, these names suggest African origins. Not that that's necessarily relevant, but it seems kind of fascinating. Godfrey Nugene. What were we able to find out? I mean, a lot of these people had records, and they were immigrants in many cases. Was there any other thing that was salient or that stood out in terms of the investigation?
You know, we definitely spent a lot of time looking at community connections. We did find, interestingly, a church in Los Angeles where a lot of African immigrant drug Medi-Cal providers belong to that church, and they belong to a Nigerian social organization tied to that church. You know, whether they sit down and talk about sort of, you know, anything nefarious, who knows? But it that's a question we spent a lot of time not really, you know, coming up with a clear answer on, and asking a lot of people, you know, how does this happen? How does this fraud crop up in such a concentrated manner in these affinity groups? And, you know, to be a fly on the wall in the right place, we didn't quite get there, but we certainly uncovered a problem. And it's incredibly gratifying to hear the amount of effort that's going into hopefully solving it.
Were you able to find church donations to this Nigerian church group from the individuals who were operators, for example? Trace those at all?
That wasn't really part of the investigation. We, you know, as with investigative reporting, there's just so many blind alleys you can go down, and so much, you know, we just really tried to keep centrally focused on, you know, what's going on at these clinics. What do the counselors have to tell us? You know, can we really get inside the four walls of that counseling room, and what's really going on there? So that was really where we just kept trying to, you know, keep the focus.
And here's Victor from Sacramento. Victor, thanks for waiting. You're on forum. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. You know, one thing that hasn't been mentioned yet as a means of dealing with this situation is managed care. This would be available under a waiver that the state would request from the federal government. drug Medi-Cal is one of the, perhaps the few, perhaps the only non-managed Medi-Cal system in the state. This, what this would do is give counties greater oversight and authority over programs such as this. A gentleman who called earlier said, well, that fragments things, and I think that's just the nature of government in California. However, what that does, though, is the state could monitor 58 counties, you know, how their oversight and their quality standards, rather than 1,200-plus independent providers. It would also give counties a little more control. I think in the Center for Investigative Reporting article, they talked about counties giving some of these organizations funding increases, and that really relates to the fact because we don't have a managed care waiver that gives local control. We have to follow federal guidelines to ensure access, and so that requires that we have, there's always enough money to pay for an additional caseload, whether that caseload is real or phantom.
What do you think, Tom Renfrey?
No, well, thanks, Victor. I think you said it better than I did. I absolutely think that that is consistent with what I've been saying about having more local control and giving counties the ability, as they do have now with mental health programs, to be able to manage these services. Right now, that, you know, because of the restrictions on that, counties' hands are tied in a lot of ways. And I absolutely agree with Victor. Good point.
Let me also go to some good points that listeners raise, or at least points that they want to raise, by email. And you can email your thoughts to us, of course, forum@kqed.org. A listener writes, it's just outrageous that the state employees continue to cost the taxpayer enormous amounts of money by approving fraudulent drug rehab facilities and patients. The state employees are lazy and too comfortable in their jobs to really take their jobs seriously, terminate them, and get good, hardworking employees. Another listener, Eric, writes, considering all the deep expertise in healthcare contracting that exists in California's commercial managed care industry, it amazes me that our state government seems incapable of tapping into this expertise to avoid fiascos like the one involving drug rehab centers. Reminds me of the huge cost overruns in our state prison healthcare system, which seems to suffer from the same lack of competence. And one of our listeners named Donald writes, why don't the programs which serve alcoholics, addicts, accept a mandate which demands that the percentage of those who are successful in abstinence over 5 years be made public information? With this in hand, the client and the general public could make a rational decision on which program to select. I'm an alcoholic addict and have over 30 years of sobriety. Let me bring another caller on, and that's Howie. Good morning.
No, this is Alexander. Yeah. Hi.
Oh, sorry. I have
I'm in Petaluma, and my comment would be that I think it's obvious we need to untie the county's hands, but at the same time, we kind of need to require them to check with the state records. And vice versa, I think the state needs to be involved as well, but I think you need to require the state to go to the county and say, hey, is this program working? Make sure it's working. And my question is, how much of the ACA money is going to be spent not just throwing it at these programs, but perhaps maybe we need to allocate some of these funds for monitoring the programs and policing them? And I'll take your comments off there.
Okay, let me go to Norman Williams on this, if I may, Norman Williams.
Well, I couldn't offer a breakdown on exactly how the money will be spent, but we will, as I mentioned before, use the ACA's resources and then the additional authority we have to screen out providers who shouldn't be in the program and make sure that the integrity of the program is protected. We've heard a lot of concern over the quality of the care, and that's our top priority here at DHCS. We have a lot more resources than the program has had in the past to organize this and to make sure the care is effective. So that's our top goal here.
And how much, if I may, Christina Jewett, are you reassured by the kind of direction that we're hearing Norman Williams and the his organization at the state level is going to be moving?
Well, certainly it sounds like they're interested and they're on task. But just to respond to the caller, I mean, he said the county should be checking the state records. I mean, these are not things we found in the state records. We pored over the state certification files to see if there was any indication that they realized this, you know, that this guy was on the banned biller list, that this other guy was a fugitive, that this other gentleman, you know, had, you know, also been, you know, someone who should have been excluded from billing Medicaid. And this was not in the state records. This is something that came out through investigative journalism. So the question of, you know, oversight is a big one. We'll be watching. We'll be requesting information and hoping that Norman grants some of our Public Record Act requests that many of them have been denied.
I think it's the central question.
So transparency, I think, is really key.
I agree with you. I think it is key. And if I could just ask Norman Williams, what follows with these suspensions? I mean, what can the public expect after these suspensions are fully investigated?
Well, once they're fully investigated and in appropriate cases prosecuted, you can expect penalties, you can expect jail time, and the top thing you can expect is a refocus, a stronger focus on making sure that these types of things don't happen in the future. As Christina mentioned, this is a very important program, and transparency is key. So we're going to be doing this in a way that we can report out to the state on our results and assure the people of California that the job is being done right.
And in your judgment, Tom Renfrey, what can the public do to help in the effort to reform the system?
Well, the public can, you know, just, I guess, in terms of the investigative reporting, I think that kind of thing is a good way to, you know, to hold feet to the fire in terms of requiring these programs to do what they're supposed to do. I think the best thing the public can do is when they in their local communities they know the programs that are working well, you know, support those programs and get involved at, you know, all politics is local. Folks can get involved at the local level and in their county boards of supervisors because these programs, again, ultimately, I mean, it's the board of supervisors that kind of has the last where the buck stops, and folks can be involved at the county level. You know, these meetings are all public, and they can go and make their voices heard.
Well,
and
I appreciate not only the fact that we have outlined this problem, which is staggering in many ways, and I hope will be, if not necessarily resolved, ameliorated. I want to remind listeners that AC360 hosts tonight and tomorrow night at 5 p.m. the CNN and CIR story that we have been talking about. I want to thank Tom Renfrey and Norman Williams and Cynthia Jewett, Christina Jewett, excuse me, for being with us this hour. Thanks to you, our listeners. Another hour ahead, China, when we return. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.